It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Coming up later in the hour, Stephen Rapp, a former U.S. ambassador at large for war crimes, also a Waterloo native, and an alumnus of Drake University. In our first half hour, another alumnus of Drake University who also became an ambassador, Darcy Vedder, joins us for this first half hour. For the past 7 years prior to this new administration, she was the chief agricultural negotiator for the U.S. Trade Representative. Before that, she served as deputy undersecretary of agriculture for farm and foreign agricultural services. Before that, she was an international trade advisor on the U.S. Senate Committee on Finance. She joins us by phone. Ambassador Vedder, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Want to mention that you'll be in Iowa speaking in Des Moines on Friday as part of the 4th Annual Nelson Institute Conference on Global Affairs. The title of your talk, From Iowa to the World, Economic Nationalism and Global Trade. Let's talk about trade policy under this administration compared to recent past administrations. Before we get into the comparison part, tell us a little bit about how much Iowa's economy depends on global trade.
Well, I don't know if you asked the average business person in Iowa if they were part of engaged in global trade, if they would say yes. I think that's one of the studies we'll hear about more tomorrow afternoon. But most likely, they are engaged in some way. They may import inputs that they use in their business or may export some of their products. Certainly, when you look at Iowa's economy, agriculture is a key part of that. And it not only is a good part of the products that are sold from Iowa, but it has a huge multiplier effect when the proceeds from those sales are then used again in Iowa's communities. So it is certainly a player in that economy and really dependent on having good access and consistent access to our trading partners' markets. Mm-hmm. And as Iowa farmers become more productive, we need to be expanding that access to make sure that what Iowa produces has an opportunity to enter the global marketplace.
So I'm just guessing here, the biggest exports from Iowa to the rest of the world are going to be our commodities, our corn, our soybeans, but also agricultural equipment, John Deere and so forth. And are there things at the top of the list there that you can name?
Those are certainly at the top of the list in the ag sector, equipment being a big item there too on the industrial goods side. But we shouldn't forget about services. I think when we talk about trade, we often think of, you know, widgets or corn and beans. But, you know, the United States is really an innovation economy and a service economy. And the expertise that is developed in Iowa and elsewhere about how to use that equipment or best practices on the farm, legal services, internet services, those are all things that can be exported as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what's been changing under this administration as far as trade policy. Talk a little bit about NAFTA and the TPP, which President Trump pulled the U.S. out of recently. How do you view Donald Trump's stated policies on international trade, sort of the America First approach?
Well, I think this administration is still trying to define what America First is going to mean. And certainly the two most visible actions that the administration has taken was, you know, really that first full day in office to say we're going to withdraw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a 12-nation deal that united a number of economies in the Asia-Pacific. Now, that deal had been negotiated, but not yet approved or entered into force, so that didn't necessarily change the terms of trade, but it did pull back from an agreement that was sort of on the cusp of providing new market access for the United States. But the current focus right now is to renegotiate the NAFTA in a way that sort of puts America first, is the rhetoric, and makes sure that we are, I guess, getting the most out of that agreement. I think the concern here, particularly in the ag sector, is that we already have really completely open borders with Mexico and with Canada on all products except for dairy, poultry, and eggs, that our tariffs are already at zero. So So if the stated goal is to expand our market access or to get rid of the barriers to that market or change the terms of trade, there's sort of nowhere to go but down. So the real question is, you know, what are the things about NAFTA that that aren't working, or how is it that we aren't able to take advantage of opportunities there? Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a difference between saying, let's redo this arrangement, which could possibly, in fact, put barriers on our ag exports and other exports to Mexico, or to say, this is a 23-year-old agreement. Can we update it and make it more relevant to the way that commerce moves north and south? Mm-hmm. And I think there are some good reasons to do the latter, update it, but we don't want to unravel what's already working very well.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about Donald Trump's campaign rhetoric, the veracity of this, the rhetoric that he had, very harsh rhetoric against international trade deals, that the U.S. has been a victim, in fact, using the word raped as a country by some really awful trade deals. To what extent is that truthful?
Well, I don't think it's truthful at all. And in fact, I think U.S. innovation and our products have meant that we've taken great advantage of access to the global economy through trade deals that we've done bilaterally or regionally, and also to the access we've gotten through our participation in the World Trade Organization. It is true that we have a more globalized economy, that there are more countries than ever before that compete with U.S. products. But it's also true that we sell goods and have done very well in marketing those goods to countries as they have opened their economies. Mm-hmm. And so this idea that trade is sort of a zero-sum game, or you can just look at one partner and say, we have a trade deficit with them, and therefore we're losing. Trades aren't made. You know, countries don't trade with each other, or businesses don't make a deal unless there's something advantageous in it for them. And so looking at that balance at one snapshot in time does not necessarily say we're losing. Certainly, you know, consumers pay less for a number of goods. We eat strawberries in January and have better nutrition because we trade. And, you know, even in agriculture, where we think of ourselves as often running a trade surplus, we are the biggest importer of a number of food items in the world as well, because we figured out that we need ingredients to then further export and to combine with our own products to add value. We export a lot of high value cuts of meat. We tend to import lower quality meat to meet consumer demand at that price point here. That puts more money in farmers' pockets by taking advantage of giving the best product or the best value on a product in the place where it's needed most.
Mm-hmm. Just on the downside, though, NAFTA has had some downsides also for Iowa, the ag economy in the Midwest, hasn't it? I mean, we've had a hollowing out of a lot of our rural areas, a loss of manufacturing in some sectors, right?
Well, I think if we look at the loss of manufacturing, now certainly, I think there's a difference between looking at the impact of globalization and being able to say that it's the result of a particular trade agreement. But also, I think we have to look at what's happening in manufacturing. A lot of the job loss in manufacturing is due to automation and increased productivity. We are, in fact, producing more in the manufacturing sector in the United States than we ever have before, but we're doing so with a lot fewer workers. And so, you know, productivity growth is thought to be, a Ball State study suggests that 85% of job losses in manufacturing are from automation. Only 13% are from increased competition through trade. And, you know, 41 million workers now work in jobs that depend on trade. And those jobs are growing three times faster than other jobs in our economy. So, you know, certainly we look at how our manufacturing plants are operating, but I don't think it's fair to say that those jobs have necessarily gone south of the border or gone to other countries. It may just take fewer workers to produce the same amount of output.
Mm-hmm. Donald Trump won Iowa by something like 9 or 10 percentage points. And rural Iowa, if you just take the rural parts of the state, voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump. I'm wondering, for those listening in rural Iowa, how do Donald Trump's stated trade policies concerning agricultural and I guess other exports from Iowa to the world line up with the interests of the producers, the farmers, the manufacturers?
Well, I think in some ways those interests may line up in that President Trump was very focused on regulation and the cost of regulations on farming operations and other businesses. And I know there's a real concern in farm country about trying to reduce the regulatory burden. And that may be an area where the interests align. But I'm hearing a lot of concern in farm country about both the trade and the immigration parts of Trump's policies, in that, you know, renegotiating NAFTA could put at risk the number two and three, or number one and two, depends on where China falls. It's always in the top three destinations for our exports, but the other two are always Canada and Mexico. And they are markets that, because of their geographic location, makes it hard are really fully integrated with the U.S. So 98% of the market share of Mexico's corn imports comes from the United States. So changing that preferential access and putting that at risk would have a very big impact on prices at a time that farmers really can't afford to see those prices go lower. So I do think that a lot of the issues affecting ag livelihoods are put at risk by putting that trade agreement on the table, or depending on how they define that negotiation, there is a risk of retaliation and of reducing our access there. You know, a reliable farm workforce is another thing that's incredibly important to the ag sector in Iowa and really throughout the country. And, you know, a focus on immigration that looks at the contributions that migrant populations have had to the U.S. is important, not just looking at any negative effects or suggesting that a tight border policy is good in all circumstances and for all sectors.
If NAFTA and TPP, which was never implemented, are so good, NAFTA being decades old, so good for the Midwest, the U.S. economy overall, what explains their unpopularity politically, with many politicians backing away from them now? Hillary Clinton, as a matter of fact, during her campaign, really backing away from these ideas. Is it the fact that the problem with communicating the message about how NAFTA has really been good for us overall, even with the cons?
I think so. I think partly it's a more nuanced argument to make, or it can be complicated to explain how many goods flow back and forth across borders before they are finished, how to account for the value that trade adds. It's a somewhat complicated economic argument. And certainly there are particular industries that have had a difficult time competing in a more globalized world. But it's hard to say that a concept, you know, that globalization is a phenomenon is the thing that's to blame. What we like to say, or what's tempting to say, is it's this one piece of paper, this agreement that somehow, if we didn't enter into it, that globalization itself would stop. And I really think the opposite is true. What we use our trade agreements for is to bring some rules and transparency and some sort of method to that trade that goes back and forth between borders. And so why wouldn't we want to enter into an agreement with other countries? They will help to level the playing field. They will put in place labor standards, environmental standards. They will protect our intellectual property. They will be transparent about how our products will be treated at the border. They will allow the open flow of data for e-commerce, one of the best ways that small businesses can enter into the global economy. That's what the rules parts of these trade agreements do, including TPP, which had the highest standards ever in areas like intellectual property and controlling, they're looking at e-commerce and the free movement of data between countries. And so it's really a chance for us to shape that force of globalization, and in many cases to ask other countries to join us and use the same high standards, that rule of law, that transparency that we take for granted in doing business here, and asking other countries to adopt that as well in order to get better access to our market, which we, of course, would also gain in theirs.
If you've just joined us, Ambassador Darcy Vedder is with us for this first half hour for another 7 or 8 minutes. For the past 7 years prior to this new administration, she was the chief agricultural negotiator for the U.S. Trade Representative. To finish up on Donald Trump's policies here, do you see the president moderating his views on international trade now that he's been in office almost 100 days?
Actually, I do. I think you heard during the campaign and heading into the first days that this administration was in office, a real emphasis on, you know, we could leave the NAFTA or we would renegotiate it completely. A lot more talk now about updating that NAFTA, seeing how we can make it serve us better, preserving market access in agriculture. They frankly heard from a number of entities in the agricultural community to say, wait a second, these are our two most valued markets and we don't want to put them at risk. Are there elements of this agreement that are working well that we might preserve? And so I think the next few weeks will be critical. The administration has said that it will send to Congress its intent to renegotiate the NAFTA, which kicks off a period with Congress. And Congress has also been pretty vocal about saying, you know, wait a second, agriculture and other entities are very export dependent. Let's make sure we don't cripple their access to other markets as we examine our trade policies. So this intent to renegotiate document will kick off a period of consulting with Congress and stakeholders to figure out what those objectives should be. And so it's really the next few weeks are a critical time for those farmers and ranchers and others who really benefit from trade to make their voices heard and say, here are my priorities as you examine these relationships, and here are the ways that trade has really contributed to my bottom line.
Ambassador Vedder, we've reported over the last few weeks there have been some talk in Mexico, I guess you'd call them threats, of boycotting American corn specifically due to Donald Trump's talk of building a wall and making Mexico pay for it. I wonder, is that possible for Mexico to do with the current trade situation to say we don't want any more corn, which is primarily Iowa corn, as the largest corn-producing state, we'll turn to South America instead?
Well, I think it is quite possible that they will turn to South America for part of their corn needs. If you look at the infrastructure and the transportation routes and the efficiency with which we provide corn to Mexico, I think an out-and-out boycott of any corn going to Mexico is pretty unlikely. But as I noted before, you know, 98% of the corn imports into Mexico come from the United States. And we're talking billions and billions of dollars each year. If that number went down to just 88%, if they diversified their purchases, that would have a huge impact on the U.S. ag economy and on corn prices. And so it's not necessarily that they need to boycott. It could just be a change and a diversification of their supply that would have a big impact here. We've more or less taken for granted that we would be the supplier of choice for Mexico for many years, and we would have to really scramble to find other partners if that would change. And if I were Mexico, I would be looking at those other partners because the language around what might happen to NAFTA has been, you know, pretty clear that they may be looking for a change or might be reducing Mexico's access for manufactured goods. And as a negotiating trade-off, if I were Mexico or Canada, I would look to agriculture as the place where I would pull back on access, knowing how important it is to the U.S. economy. And so our customers in Mexico would only be doing the smart thing to say, if it suddenly becomes more expensive, if tariffs are imposed on corn coming from the U.S., where else will I look to make sure that I can guarantee supply in an affordable and timely way? And that's happening as Brazil and Argentina continue to be more efficient in their production of corn and of soybeans, and as they are starting to look outward. While the U.S. and the EU are starting to have a more nationalistic view of trade, both of those governments, Argentina and Brazil, have just undergone political change where the emphasis is on getting them re-engaged with the global economy.
Mm-hmm. So what I hear you saying, and we only have a couple minutes left, we're really at a crossroads in international trade in the U.S., aren't we?
Yes, I think that's an absolutely true statement, a good way to put it.
Mm-hmm. Very quickly, let's talk about China before we have to say goodbye. Donald Trump welcoming the Chinese president to his Florida resort tomorrow. Iowa Governor Terry Branstad going to China soon to become the next U.S. ambassador to China. Tell us, is there a connection? Will Governor Branstad, soon to be Ambassador Branstad, be able to impact trade policy, specifically trade policy for the Midwest?
Well, I certainly hope so, and we all wish him very well in that role. I think the ambassador has an opportunity to sort of set the tone and to really be that voice for the United States that's constantly interacting with our Chinese counterparts. And his knowledge of agriculture, his past relationship with the president are all things that could serve him and serve us very well. And so I certainly hope so. I expect agriculture will be a high priority for him. But as with Mexico and Canada, if we do start to take actions against China, particularly its manufactured goods, there is the possibility that China will look at that as a tit-for-tat situation and say, if we're facing new restrictions, are there areas where we may impose those restrictions on the United States? And certainly, as our number one destination, China is our number one destination for soybeans and a strong purchaser of corn and many other crops. We would not want to see a trade war reduce our opportunities to sell into what is a very big and growing market in China.
Mm-hmm. We have just a few seconds left. A personal question, if I might. Ambassador Vetter, if you would poll people about their interests, I don't imagine trade policy would be high on many lists. what do you find exciting about it? We have just a few seconds.
It's fascinating. I mean, in order to make good trade policy, you have to understand the underlying economics. You have to think about building coalitions, what's in a country's interest, what's in the interest of industries. And a lot of it is about timing and relationships. And so you use both your hard and your soft skills to try and put your best foot forward and get the best deal for your country. And in my case, for our country's farmers and ranchers. A lot of fun.
Okay, Ambassador Darcy Vetter, thank you so much for making this a fascinating conversation.
Thank you.
Okay, Darcy Vetter will be speaking in Des Moines tomorrow as part of the 4th Annual Nelson Institute Conference on Global Affairs. Her talk, From Iowa to the World, Economic Nationalism and Global Trade. Coming up after a short break, Stephen Rapp, Ambassador Stephen Rapp. I'll ask him about the latest chemical attack in Syria. And his part in prosecuting people charged with war crimes and crimes against humanity. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.